On our June edition of Our Town, we've kind of been spicing it up a little bit, bringing you people from here and there and everywhere. And right now with me is Alicia DiNicola. Now, some of you, many of you may know Alicia in town. I don't think you were. Were you DiNicola last time you lived here?
No, it would be Alicia Ori.
Alicia Ori. So Alicia is here because she is looking for a grant to write a book about small town media. So I thought it would be a good idea to come and find out why. Alicia, thank you for being here today. Thank you for participating in this. And tell me a little bit about your background. I know you work at Emory in Atlanta. Tell me a little bit of how that all came to be. What's your degree and what's your background?
It's a longer story than that. I started out in Florence when I was in high school at KGBU when the radio station first started. And I worked, I came back and worked at the Siuslaw News for a number of years. And then my second career, I went back to school and became an anthropologist. And I work largely in India and Costa Rica, and I look at the way that people's work influences who they are and their identifications with themselves and their community and the way that they sort of see, you know, morals and values in the world connected to their work. And my background in newspaper and radio here is very closely connected to why I became an anthropologist. I have always done small town media. And I think that small town media is very, very different than, say, the New York Times or CNN or Fox News. And one of the reasons for that is because the stories that are told in local newspapers are the stories that we tell about ourselves, to know ourselves, to kind of figure out who it is that we are. And I think that large newspapers like CNN and, you know, Fox News, they reflect who we are back at us too. But they work through larger media. They work through national and international connections. They when they talk to people, they talk to different people than local media talk to. And so
when they do talk to local media, it's the lady who has really bad English and her trailer just got blown away by a tornado, and you'd think that all of America is like this lady.
Yeah, I mean, so there's that. And it's, you know, you get one person who's supposed to represent, you know, an entire group of people. The media is critiqued a lot for going in, spending a little bit of time and going back out without actually knowing the people who, you know, they're working with. Anthropologists, when they study a community, they go in for at least a year. You can't become an anthropologist without studying whatever community it is you're working with, and staying and living and doing all the things that, you know, that community does for a year, you know, or more. And then we follow those communities for long periods of time. And
let me stop you for a second.
Yeah.
What kind of things are you looking for when you go into that environment? As an anthropologist, are you looking to see what makes the community tick as a whole? Are you seeing how the individual pieces come together to make that community? What is it you're studying when you go in there?
All of that, a lot of that, but I think there's some sort of truisms about anthropology that we talk about when we teach anthropology, because I do that too. And one of those things is to make the strange familiar and the familiar strange. So that's one of those things, to sort of go into places that you're not familiar with, learn a language that you're not familiar with, and see how other people do things. And the question that comes after that is, how do other people make sense? right? Like, what is the reason that somebody else would do that? How does that make sense to them? So rather than, and once you do that and you live in a place for a long period of time, those things start to become second nature to you too. You begin to not only see why they make sense, but feel why they make sense in an embodied kind of way, right? Everybody else is doing that. It fits in with all sorts of other structures and ways of doing things. And the next thing that happens is when you come home or when you start looking at the things that you're familiar with, you begin to ask yourself, well, why do I do it that way? Right. And so.
So in other words, something that makes sense in this community, you bring it to the other community, it doesn't necessarily make sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have a tendency to grow up in places where lots of people are a lot like us, where the morals and value systems and the political structures are very similar. And we think those are the natural right way to do things. So if you spend time, especially, you know, deep, extended time in other people's communities, you begin to see why those things make sense. And you have to then ask yourself, okay, how does mine make sense, right? It produces a little bit of reflexivity in the self as well. And the reason that I love it is because it tends to connect people. It tends to allow you to see what's the context in which that person makes sense, in which that person's rituals, that person's belief system, that person's way of doing their daily life. What's the context in which they make sense?
And doesn't that help to cut down on like prejudices or preconceived notions that we have about people? Wayne and I were talking the other day about, you know, when America was created, you know, I have a suit and tie on. That person's over there in some kind of weird clothes, and he's not as good as I am because he doesn't look like me. And yet, when you get in there, it kind of changes your perspective of that. Is that?
Yeah, we know, right, that the more you know about somebody else, the more people who are different than you that you work with and play with and talk with, that the more understanding you have of the ways people do things differently, the more compassion, right? Empathy and compassion are created by not just hearing about people, but actually experiencing other people's ways of doing things and being friends with them and knowing them.
Well, you work in the South now in Georgia. I lived many years in the South, and I had a lot of experiences with people, especially as they got older. I met a woman in her 90s that had never been out of the county or the town that she lived in. So her experiences were all based on that. And I'm guessing as an anthropologist, people that probably tend to travel more or experiencing other things and other have a more wider range of acceptance, maybe?
Sometimes
it can be right? The opposite too. I mean,
yeah, because people who travel tend to come from a very narrow socioeconomic position, right? And so oftentimes that sort of narrow socioeconomic position can keep them from seeing other things. And also the way that we travel sometimes, right? People don't go and stay for a year and a half someplace most of the time. They go, they experience shopping, they experience people in that community serving them as opposed to, right, living with them and doing the same jobs that they're doing. So if I was going to go study jewelry makers in Costa Rica, I sit down with them and show them the jewelry that I make and you know, and I sit with them as the tourists are coming in. And so you become part of the lives of people as opposed to going and having the local people serve you and, you know, leaving then again.
So listening to all that about how anthropology sort of works and all that, let's bring it back around to the idea of local media. Do you have a preconceived, maybe that's not the right word, do you have an idea of where you want the book to go, or is this one of those things where it's like, I'm just going to write it where it takes me?
Yes to both of those questions. So I do have preconceived notion. I do have an idea, having worked in media for such a long time in small town media, in a place where I had where I was born and grew up, or I guess I wasn't born here, working in a place where I grew up and then coming back and, you know, standing in line at the grocery store with people that I write about and for in the newspaper is very much like what you would do in anthropology. I mean, you're here for long periods of time. It's not like CNN where you might go somewhere and stay for an hour, interview people, and then leave. You're here. You're part of the community. What you write about the community, who you are in the community, who other people are in the community, is it matters in a way that is about who you are as well. And that's different than going into somebody else's community for a quick, you know, interview and coming back out.
How does working in small media differ in the large media? In that, if I'm a reporter on CNN. I can talk about John in Florence, Oregon, and not necessarily worry about the repercussions of what I say about John versus George here in Florence talking about John in Florence. And there's sort of a certain sort of an agreement where you have with your community on how you report about that.
Exactly. I mean, I think, and that to me has always been when you learn about journalism in college, you learn about the ethics of journalism. You learn about the ethics of writing about people. And I think that it is at its best in small town media, where you are both writing about and are part of the community. That's the reason that I like anthropology so much, because it's like that. But the intriguing thing to me is that anthropologists, even though they stay for long periods of time, they write for an academic audience. Right. They don't write for the audience that they're in, you know, invested right. in wherever they're going. And there's a sort of moral conundrum there. Right. Large media goes in. It also doesn't write about the community that it belongs to. Small town media is in a really unique position because what it does is write about the communities that it's part of. And so, you know, the person with a microphone or with the you know, pen and pencil or the typewriter keyboard, they're part of the community that they're writing about. And the community that they're writing about talks back to them, right? So the characters in your story talk back to you.
Right. And there's a certain amount of accountability that comes with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's a different kind of accountability, moral accountability, right, than other kinds of media. And I don't think that small town media gets enough credit. I don't think people see that kind of accountability and ethical placement of the writer, right? Writing is about power. When you write about somebody, it's subject, verb, object. The subject objectifies the person that they're writing about. So it is in sense a very powerful way of talking about somebody else. But if you're part of the person, people, the person that is being talked about, there's an ethical, what would I call it?
Responsibility?
It's an ethical responsibility, certainly, but it's even more than that. You are the person that you're writing about. You're both subject and object, I guess that's what I would say.
Because you're part of the community, writing about the community of which you are part of.
And so you're also objectifying yourself. And there's a sort of displacement of power there. It seems like reporters are very powerful, and they are in certain senses. But there is, in a sense, in small town media at least, a kind of displacement of power in the fact that you're writing about yourself and your own community.
And it seems like when you take large market media and a national media per se versus the local media, people that tend to get, and again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I may be, but people who tend to get most of their news and information from the large markets, from the CNNs, from the MSNBCs, from the Fox, they're not as necessarily grounded as people that also have a good media source for them locally.
Yes. And another part of what makes local media, I think, so fantastic and so much a part of, a necessary part of the community, is that they're grounded geographically, right? They can't get away. If you're talking about somebody's kids in the local school, if you're talking about, you know, as my mentor says, the sort of, you know, over the fence chicken dinners, the Elks Lodge, the Moose Lodge, the Grange, if you're talking about all those places where people have everyday experiences, you're talking about something that is grounded geographically, where CNN is not grounded geographically. It goes here, it goes there. The reflection of who we are as a people is a much larger national reflection, right? But the strength of local media is also its weakness. It can't get away from the geographical location in which it writes about.
And I imagine a person that is very good in local media might have a harder time adjusting to a larger market media because they want to have that connection.
Yeah, I worked in Baltimore for a while as a reporter for real estate, and it was huge. It was kind of fun to sort of see the politics of it, but I never really felt like I knew the people. I never really felt like it mattered on the ground. I ended up doing local community-based stories, and that was, I think, what drove me out of journalism was I didn't like being in the sort of large media. I didn't feel like I belonged to the places that I was writing about.
Alicia DiNicola, it's a pleasure. She is going to be hanging with us for a little bit here and doing some research for her book, maybe. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
In the next hour, we're going to start it up with Andrew Miller, who's an appraiser here in town, been doing it for 30 plus years. We're going to find out about the housing market and how he thinks it's going.